Dip, 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 dip. Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la, puddle. Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la, puddle. Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la, puddle. Good evening. This is the Labor Exchange, and I'm Dennis Kreese, a member of the Boulder Area Labor Council, AFL-CIO. The subject of tonight's program is the Irish Road to Leadville, Irish immigrant miners, 1870 to 1890 and beyond. With us is a very special guest, as before, Dr. James Walsh, history professor, University of Colorado, Denver. Jim, thank you for being on Labor Exchange again at KGNU.
Great to be back, Dennis.
Jim, let's begin with some background. As before, let's reacquaint the KGNU listening audience, especially our new and younger members, with who you are. So with that, how has your career work evolved since arriving in Colorado 20 or more years ago? And with that, could you share your academic background as well?
Yeah, I'm an assistant professor in the political science department here at University of Colorado, Denver. I've taught here for 19 years. I specialize in labor and immigration and Irish-American politics and history, as well as social movements. I also run a community theater called the Romero Theater Troupe.
And again, the academic, let me see that, if I remember, you went to Duke for undergraduate, is that correct?
Yes, that's right.
And you got your PhD here at University of Colorado.
Yes.
Jim, just to finish up on the background, how has your background, mine as well, Western PA, contributed to your present perspective of all workers and their families?
Wow, and numerous ways. I'm from rural Western Pennsylvania. I'm from a county that voted 70% for Donald Trump, Butler County. And I'm from the steel town of Butler, born in Butler, raised near Butler. It's a kind of a burned out old steel town today. And that upbringing shaped me in a variety of ways, and it led me to ultimately want to dedicate my academic work to telling the stories of working class communities and the history that is really generally not told. Labor struggles, forms of resistance, everyday life, and the way people organize themselves and found dignity in a world that where they didn't have a lot of control over their lives. So,
all right, then, Jim.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the content of the show, The Irish Road to Leadville. What was the inspiration, motivation that took you to Leadville, Colorado, as part of your dissertation research on 1800s immigration to the Rocky Mountain region?
Well, I'm from an Irish Catholic family. My name's James Patrick Walsh, and when I started thinking about a dissertation topic, I was at that time in my life, I was learning a lot about my own roots, and it was really reshaping the way I saw my own identity. So I decided that I wanted to study Irish immigrant history in Colorado. So I started scratching around a little bit, and everything I looked at pointed me to Leadville. Leadville had the largest Irish immigrant community in the history of the state. In 1880, there were at least 3,000 Irish-born people living in Leadville, and at least as many second generation. So this was a very large community that made up, in my estimates, as much as 20% of the entire town had Irish roots at that time. So Leadville was sort of an Irish cultural center in the Rocky Mountain region. And that's how I ended up wanting to study Leadville and the Leadville Irish.
Well, I guess a couple more questions, actually about four more about Leadville. So let's Leadville, Colorado. During the historical time frame of the 1870s and 1880s, what was the primary economic factor here that brought thousands of Irish immigrants? And with that said, where and what part of Ireland did these Irish immigrants come from? And was this a good, quote-unquote, fit for them at the outset?
Yeah, so the silver rush, one of the largest in North American history, if not the largest, started in Leadville around 1876. At that time, there were just a few hundred people up there in that region. By 1880, there were nearly 40,000 people in the in Leadville and surrounding gulches. And so there was a heavy Irish presence among those people who went to Leadville to seek their fortune. I learned in my research that of those 3,000 Irish-born people, 40% of them came from County Cork. And that's because there were copper mines on the Barra Peninsula in southwestern part of Cork that had sort of fizzled out and died around the 1860s. And those miners had migrated into the U.S. mining communities like the Upper Peninsula of Michigan or the anthracite coal mines of eastern Pennsylvania. And then when the silver boom started in Leadville, hundreds and hundreds of them made their way to Leadville.
Jim,
so some of the place names in Leadville are named after Irish patriots like O'Donovan Rasa and Robert Emmett and Wolfe Tone. So we can see just in the place names this Irish history.
Jim, quote unquote, 2 mile high city and cloud city. Could you describe this geographical aspect of Leadville, Colorado, and how it contributed to the very dire and difficult living and working conditions for these Irish immigrant miners?
Absolutely. Leadville is 10,200 feet. It's the highest, I believe, the highest incorporated city in North America. And for people to come from sea level and move to Leadville was itself just an incredible environmental shock to the system. These miners were, in the winter, going to work in 20 degree below weather, spending all day in the mines and then coming outside sweaty, and their clothes would freeze immediately. So part of the request they were making of the company is that they were working in such dangerous conditions that they deserved a better shape, they deserved better pay, because the life expectancy up in Leadville was unbelievably low. The people buried the people listed in the Annunciation Catholic Church death records, the average age of the death of all the people listed in those records, thousands of people, is 33. And in the pauper section of Evergreen Cemetery, where they buried people in unmarked graves, mostly Irish people without means, the average age of the 2,000 or more people buried in that section is 22. So I think those statistics alone say it all.
Yeah, in terms of the difficulty and just dire living conditions. Jim, you mentioned this earlier in this interview, but you know, maybe you can give a little more detail. As of 1880, what distinctive factor did the Irish population in Leadville, Colorado, hold in the western United States outside of California?
Well, it was considered to be really a very important Irish place because there was such a large Irish community.
The largest population as well, right?
Yeah, it was the largest. So in 1880, according to the census report statistics, per capita, Leadville was the most Irish place between the West Coast and the Midwest, in the Chicago area, of any county in the country. Leadville, I think 9% of the people in Leadville were born in Ireland. And that was the largest percentage of anywhere, even more than Butte. So here in Colorado, we need to recognize that we have this rich cultural heritage in Leadville. And the what we're working on right now, Dennis, is in Evergreen Cemetery, which is the largest, the old cemetery in Leadville on the outskirts, that pauper section, it's called the Catholic Free Section, is where they buried the paupers, people without means. There's about 2,000 people buried there. We estimate about two-thirds of them are Irish because we have the names
Okay, we're going to get to that in a second.
Okay.
And but I just want to follow up on this question, is that why did this large Irish population not sustain itself like Butte, Montana, which you already mentioned, and which I'm aware of because my grandfather, Peter King, worked in Butte, Anaconda, in a copper mines from 1880 to 1900 before he emigrated back to Ireland to marry my grandmother, and then they had 12 kids. But this was another large Irish community at the same time period. So why Butte was able to sustain himself, but not Leadville?
Yeah, great question. Butte had two things going for it. First of all, they were mining copper. Secondly, those mines, some of the largest mines there were Irish-owned. And so both of those factors contributed to Butte sustaining its Irish community for many decades. In Leadville, the mines, for the most part, none of them were Irish-owned. The Irish were simply seen as mules to do the work for the lowest wages. The other big factor is that they were mining silver. And in the 1890s, the bottom of this fell out of the silver market. The silver market collapsed. The Sherman Silver Purchase Act was repealed, and Leadville began a slow decline in the mid-1890s. And what happened with the Leadville Irish is they dispersed. They left. And I found some evidence in the records, in the church records, of where they went. They went to Denver. Many of them went to the Gold Rush in Cripple Creek and Victor, and many of them went to other mining camps across the West. But they continued their transient. These miners lived very transient lives. They were constantly on the move, looking for a better situation in another mining camp.
All right.
So the reason we don't commemorate them and the reason that they're not widely known about in the state's history is that they were temporary. They were only there really for, at best, 15 years.
Okay, then, Jim, I'm going to get right back to you. For those of you who have joined us late, this is the Labor Exchange. I'm Dennis Kreese, a member of the Boulder Area Labor Council, AFL-CIO. The subject of tonight's program has been The Irish Road to Leadville, Irish Immigrant Miners, 1870 to 1890 and Beyond. With us is a special guest, Dr. James Walsh, History Professor, University of Colorado, Denver. Jim, just to finish up this part on the Irish Road to Leadville, you know, I'm a fourth-generation union member and very close to, you know, your Butler County you mentioned too, and I wouldn't be surprised if Beaver County was at 70% for Trump as well in the past election. But let's talk about something that I've done, my father did, and my grandfather, and that's strike. And let's talk about the strike of autumn, 1880. Could you talk about this strike led by 28-year-old Dublin-born miner Michael Mooney? And how many miners went on strike? What were the issues, and what was the outcome?
Dennis, this is the most extraordinary story that no one in Colorado has ever heard of. In May, late May of 1880, 5,000 miners walked out of the mines in a single day and paraded in military order in perfect silence down Main Street in Leadville, declaring their work stoppage. It wasn't spontaneous, although the trigger was spontaneous. The miners were protesting lack of safety conditions. The number of men being maimed and killed in the mines was extraordinary. They were protesting their $3 a day wage. They were asking for $4 a day. And the straw that broke the camel's back is when they were ordered to work in silence. They were told you cannot talk or sing while you work. And for the Irish, that was a huge thing, not only because singing and storytelling made the day go quickly, but also because they were organizing as they worked. They were building the union, and telling them they had to work in silence was a way of breaking the union. So that's what triggered the walkout. Business interests, including Horace Tabor in Leadville, used their leverage on the governor to convince him that this was a violent uprising. Not a single act of violence was committed. But that's how the business community reacted, and that's how the governor reacted. And within about 10 days, the National Guard was in Leadville, arresting striking miners using vagrancy laws to arrest them and force them to work on chain gangs building roads in Leadville. So the strike was crushed in 3 weeks into the strike by the National Guard. Mooney was an amazing leader. He kept the men sober and peaceful, and he was arrested when he came down to Denver looking for support among the workers here, but released the following day when the Denver police realized he hadn't committed a crime. He was nearly lynched by mobs in Leadville of vigilantes, but he had always had a bodyguard of miners around him wherever he went, and he was blacklisted when the strike ended and could no longer get mining work in Leadville. So eventually he and his family moved to Seattle. They ended up in Butte, where he worked as a miner, and then in Los Angeles, where he lived out the rest of his life, working odd jobs. So Michael Mooney is a name that anyone interested in Colorado history should know about. But this was a fight. This was an Irish fight for basic human dignity. And it's reflective of the struggle that Irish immigrants faced in the West, which was different from what they faced in the East, where they were mostly in urban areas and they were able to use machine politics to garner power. In the Rocky Mountain West, it was a different situation. So this is an important story.
I may not have these details exactly right, and I just want to build on that. I went to the University of Montana for the Rocky Mountain Labor School back in the summer of 1980. And I was there 1 week in Missoula, connected with some people there, and talked about my grandfather, who I never met, obviously. And one of them told me, I believe he was a police officer in Butte. His name was Joyce, which was my grandmother's maiden name. And he said, Dennis, you need to look up the Western Federation of Miners, which I believe was called then Local Number 1. And he says, you will find some more stuff about that, maybe find some names or something about your grandfather. And actually, they have some records up here at the University of Colorado. But I did find a Joyce's name, but a lot of these records up here, when I asked the librarian, why are they kind of singed around the edges and everything? And she said, Dennis, they burned that Union Hall down, and this was which was salvaged out of it. And a lot of it, they didn't get. So just want to add sure. into what you say is that they had a really difficult time at that time. Mm. Jim, let's go back to this, and I know you've spoke about it, but again, more detail. Evergreen Cemetery. Could you talk about your discovery at the Evergreen Cemetery 13 years ago as you did research on Irish migratory miners in the Rocky Mountains? And again, what was the time frame of these burials and how many were buried in the quote-unquote old Catholic section?
Yeah, so this is what's happening today, the campaign that we're pushing. When I first went to Evergreen Cemetery, I found what I expected, which is a nicely kept, manicured cemetery with large markers and some small, some large, but well cared for. But as I went to the back of the cemetery, I saw a sign that said Old Catholic or Free Catholic. It's called both, really, in the records. And what you'll discover if you go there is you suddenly leave the cared for, the manicured part and that's watered and taken care of, and you suddenly emerge in a pine forest that's very brown and dry and not cared for, with acres and acres of sunken graves, unmarked sunken graves. Some of them not even put in the earth in any sort of order, just sort of hodgepodge. So when I discovered this, it really stayed with me. It has a very visceral effect. And this year, we wrote to the Irish Consul General, who represents this region, and convinced him that he needs to come here to have some sort of a memorial for that part of the cemetery. I discovered in the records that of all the names of the people in those sunken graves, it looks like about two-thirds of them are Irish names. So So those Irish people we're talking about who participated in that strike and lived in very dire conditions, worked in very dire conditions, for the most part, that's where they're buried.
And the average age of death was about, what, 23? And the possible causes of death could be pneumonia and take whatever you wish, right?
Yeah, that's right. It was the average age of death, 22 in that section, in the sunken grave section. And so the number of children, the number of infants is extraordinary. So it really reveals the fact that this is a human tragedy. This isn't some Wild West Disney story. It's a human tragedy that the Irish faced. So the Consul General was very, very receptive and interested.
Okay. And he
had a couple of hundred people there several weeks ago.
Jim, let's
get
into
the ceremony at the grave site.
Okay, then let's get into that. Saturday, October 1st, 2016 at 3 p.m. Could you discuss that commemoration of unknown Irish immigrants held at Evergreen Cemetery on Saturday, October 1st, 2016? And what other activities preceded and followed this event? And again, could you mention some of the notable people that were in attendance at these activities?
Yeah, we had an entire day where the city made it into a day to commemorate its Irish history. Started with the St. Patrick's Practice Day Parade. That's what they call it in Leadville. They have it every September, where they have a St. Patrick's Parade straight down Main Street, and then the parade goes, bagpipers play, and then they go right into the saloon. Well, they moved it back 2 weeks to coincide with this event. So we started the day with this parade. Then I gave a talk in the church, the Annunciation Church, the Irish Catholic Church, about this history and my research. And then we all went to the cemetery where we had a bagpiper playing, and we were able to have a ceremony there. Several people spoke at the ceremony. Dennis Gallagher had said something. The priest of the local parish talked. Consul General Adrian Farrell gave a nice talk. And some of the people who are the descendants of Leadville Irish, who are buried in those unmarked graves, had a chance to say something as well. It was a very beautiful and solemn event. And what we did is we created momentum and ideas around what a memorial might look like.
Well, let's talk about that. The memorial to Irish immigrants. Could you give an update on the memorial under discussion and all the details involved with this project? And might it be soon that members of this KGNU listening audience, most likely many others as well, be able to send contributions to make this memorial a reality?
Yes. Great question. So right now we're talking with the state archaeologist and the State Historical Society, History Colorado, and the Historic Preservation Fund about their support for this idea. And we're walking very slowly and gingerly. None of us really have experience in historical memorials, and so we're seeking the expertise of the State Historical Society. And once we feel like we have the financial piece figured out, or at least the direction, then we need to figure out what the memorial would look like. So this is in the very early stages. We haven't coalesced around any idea yet. And we'll probably have a meeting after the holidays where we're able to discuss it in more depth. But it's clear that something's going to happen. We just don't know when, and we don't know what. But one of our debates was about whether or not we want to preserve the unmarked section as it is, or whether we want to clean it. We see it as our duty to clean it up and make it shine, so to speak. And I think that the consensus seemed, at least to me, seemed to be that we want to preserve it as it is, because it has an aesthetic power to it, a very visual reminder of what working class people faced at that time and how class mattered at that time.
And I'm looking at that picture right now, and when and I have a number of times, and as one is a son of an Irish immigrant, it's very daunting. It's tough to look at, but I'm glad you're going to be doing that. Jim, we have a couple minutes left, and we've talked about this, but I want to go to this part. And I think this may be the most important question of this interview, immigration. So with that, Jim, could you make a connection of the hardships of these Irish immigrant miners with those immigrants of today, especially those from Mexico and Central America? And what are some of the similarities?
Yeah, and absolutely. So especially given the fact that we just experienced the election of Donald Trump as president of the United States, who used a nativist, xenophobic platform to position himself for his candidacy. I think anyone with Irish roots in this country ought never to forget where they come from, and ought never to forget the hardships that their ancestors faced and the kinds of xenophobia that they faced. Because it's really very, very, very closely related to what's happening today, the way that immigrants today are scapegoated, the way that they are, I mean, I think Trump called them rapist murderers and whatnot. So immigrant community today and the immigrant community of yesterday, of our Irish ancestors, are the backbone of this country in terms of the hard work that's done, in terms of the contributions to our infrastructure and cultural contributions. And so it seems to me to be such a striking comparison to be made. And walking through that cemetery, I think you can't help but reflect upon the struggles immigrants do face today. Leadville today has quite a large Mexican immigrant community. And the Irish church that used to be predominantly Irish, Annunciation, today is predominantly a Mexican constituency. And so that transition has taken place over the course of a century, but not without some conflict. So Leadville is a kind of a microcosm of our history and of how immigrants struggle today. So I tried to remind people on October the 1st that when we commemorate these immigrants in those graves, we must keep an eye and an ear to standing in solidarity with immigrants today.
All right, then, Jim, just I got about 1 minute left. Wish we could do more because we could talk more about that. But as a summary, do you have any final thoughts or comments for this KGNU listening audience, the Irish Network of Colorado, others as well, in the context of tonight's subject, the Irish Road to Leadville, Irish Immigrant Miners, 1870 to 1890 and beyond?
Yeah, I would just leave people with encouraging people to dig into their roots, to find out who they are and where they come from, and to try to understand how important it is today in this political climate to speak up when we hear immigrant communities being attacked and being targeted, and not just to hide away because we know it's not going to happen to us. So this story to me is a reminder of that duty to speak up today, particularly since this election, when we have clear evidence that communities are being targeted.
All right, then, Jim.
Children are in fear.
We're out of time. So
okay.
Thank you for being on Labor Exchange at KGNU. And if anybody has any comments about this show or any other show on KGNU, please call 303-447-9911. And next week, Monday, November 21st, 2016, please listen to La Lucha Sigue at 6 p.m. This has been the Labor Exchange, and I am Dennis Kreese for KGNU Boulder, KGNU Denver, and KGNU.org.